Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
And when I listened to it, I was like, oh my God, I totally didn't acknowledge that. That's awkward. That's going to sound weird.
Welcome to Recotopia, a happy home for recommended movies, shows, and music from two people you can definitely trust. Trustability varies by region, no guarantees implied. Now, here are your hosts, Chris Atkinson and Jeremy Scott.
Whoa, whoa, whoa! Take it easy, sweetheart. You looking for me? See, you met the twins. Boy, you're everything they say, ain't you? I guess we both are. How you doing? I'm Oz.
Hello, everybody. It's Recotopia, episode 7. I'm Chris Atkinson.
And I'm Jeremy Scott.
Yes, today's big recommend will be The Batman. This could have gone sideways, obviously.
Yes, it could have. It
could have gone extremely sideways, but we will be getting into The Batman. Just acknowledge the chat out there watching us live. You guys are amazing. I love
What's
you guys
up, everybody?
So much. I love you guys so much for coming out and listening to us today. So we have we'll start off with our small recommends today. Our the ones we get into just a little bit.
It's no big deal.
It's so small and light.
It's small. It's tiny. It's petite. It's wee.
Jeremy, do you want to kick us off?
I will kick it.
Can
just
I kick it?
Just a couple days ago, I saw a brand new movie that is both in theaters and available on Showtime called After Yang.
Mm.
And this movie has stayed in my head, man.
Oh, yeah?
And I told you guys almost as soon as I finished it that I had really enjoyed it. It's a subtle near future, not unlike the movie Her,
mm-hmm.
in that, you know, there's clearly advanced stuff and tech, but it does still sort of look like, you know, our civilization. And you have Colin Farrell playing a not penguin type character. And he and his family have this helper android guy named Yang. And he's really great with their little girl. The little girl loves him. And he starts to not function correctly. And so Colin Farrell decides to go and try and get him fixed. And when they're tinkering around, him and this guy he finds, they find a way to access Yang's memories.
Mm-hmm.
And the next little bit is essentially Colin Farrell's character periodically watching these memories and starting to see his own life from a different perspective, see moments from his own life from Yang's perspective, see moments that Yang spent with the daughter. But then he also sees a strange woman that he's never met. And she's mixed in with all the memories of his family. And he's like, did Yang have a secret girlfriend? Was he capable of a relationship? And from there, I won't say anything more. But the presentation of this film is really interesting. It's lyrical. I compared it to you guys to early Sofia Coppola in terms of long passages where nobody says anything and there's light music and we just kind of get a glimpse of the room that they're in, and they might be reading or eating something, and you might hear voiceover echoing from the previous scene. A dreamlike kind of film. Not a straightforward narrative in almost any sense of the word, but the coolest thing about it is how casual it feels, and yet how many big ideas it left me with in the end about humanity and existence. And it's a tightrope, I think, to walk, to make a film like that, that can be both breezy and existential. This is three thumbs up, if I had three, but it's two because I only have two. After Yang, in theaters now, on Showtime. Let me see if it's also, I'm sure that means you can also rent it on streaming services that rent. You can also watch it on Hulu if you have a premium subscription.
All right. Awesome. And sorry, I think you said something about Colin Farrell playing some non-penguin character in this. And I was sitting here like trying to find something real quick, and I didn't acknowledge your joke, and I'm sorry about that. There was something like that that happened last week, by the way. There was some joke you told, and I was sitting there. I remember I was looking at something, trying to get something adjusted for the next thing. And when I listened to it, I was like, oh my God, I totally didn't acknowledge that. That's awkward. That's going to sound weird. One of my small recommends actually was recommended to me from our buddy Patrick, who from Modern Horrors, who recommended a movie called House with the number 0 and the number 3 for the letters.
I see.
And it's kind of like, now I've discussed a movie before called The Man from Earth, which was also another movie recommended to me by another person. This movie has a lot of that in it, where there are friends who are maybe haven't seen each other in a long time or a while, who call get a party going basically in this house out in the middle of nowhere, or just rent a cabin or something. And the whole thing for a long time is just a lot of discussion. It's a lot of really interesting discussion about things that are possible and everything. Man from Earth is about a guy who is telling about his life for thousands of years, basically. And everybody's like, you can't be serious, right? You're talking about living with Cleopatra or whatever, you know, that type of thing. In this one, the discussion comes about technology and what we can do with technology these days. And boy, you better do stuff with your passwords, and you better do stuff that makes sure that nobody can break in and everything. And one of these guys, says, was able to tap into WikiLeaks, and I was able to find out that there's this app that you can put on your phone that shows you like 3 to 10 seconds in the future or something like that. And everybody's like, yeah, right, whatever. And he's like, here, let me show you how it works. And like, they show this guy like going around with his phone and taking images of everything around the house, and he's like, there's nothing different in here. And he goes, and then he finally finds a lamp that's off in the camera, but outside it's on. And they're like, well, like, you know what? And so he's like, what's going on here? And he like accidentally touches the lamp or something, and the light goes out. And it's kind of that Matrix thing, like, you know, what a really bacon noodle is if you, you know, would have knocked the vase off, and if you didn't know about that, whatever. So they keep experimenting with this, and they keep finding things in the code of this app that they can change the time that is allotted in there. Can they look in the past? Can they look in the future? Can they look further in the future? Because there's limits to what this this program can do. And it gets to some really scary places, and I'll let you watch the movie to find out where this movie is headed. Boy, the chat has come up with a lot of different house movies, man. There's no doubt about it. It's like the IMDb of all house movies are coming up on chat right now. Luckily, this is numbered 0 and 3. It's easy to find, so, you know.
Intriguing. Patrick is going to get a lot of love on this podcast.
He is.
Because he's the responsible for my next recommend. this is a film that I saw back in 2016, and my memory was that I just thought it was okay. And Patrick and I were talking the other day, and he was expressing his love for it, and I expressed my okayness. And he compelled me through his enthusiasm to give it another view. The movie is The Founder with Michael Keaton. This is actually a stellar cast. Nick Offerman, John Carroll Lynch, a.k.a. the Zodiac Killer. Isn't that the guy that plays the Zodiac Killer?
He's in Fargo.
I'll make you some eggs. Patrick Wilson, Linda Cardellini, Laura Dern, BJ Novak, for Pete's sake. It's a great cast, but it's basically about Ray Kroc. I think we're on the same page.
Yeah.
Ray Kroc, the founder of McDonald's, and who actually, according to this movie, essentially stole the franchise from the two brothers who created McDonald's.
Mm-hmm.
What's interesting is the period setting is, you know, what made him attracted to the McDonald's restaurant he found in California when he's out there trying to sell mixers was how fast they got their food out. He just wants a hamburger. He goes up and orders, and they bring the bag to him like 20 seconds later. And he's like, this can't be mine. I just ordered. And they're like, yes, sir. We just made it. And so he finally gets a tour and sees this basically amazing setup these guys have come up with to speed the entire process and serve more customers faster. And then he just slowly, he basically gets them to let him make a franchise. And then he slowly starts expanding. And then he starts expanding without their permission. And then they get into lawsuits. The movie's really good. It's better than I remembered that first viewing. But what's great is Keaton. He's outstanding. He usually is, but, and I think he was nominated for a few awards for this performance. But he's really good. If you haven't seen it and you like Michael Keaton, there's some really cool history of the franchise in here, but also he's outstanding. Let's see if I can tell you where you can find that movie.
Okay.
Oh, wait, there it is. Amazon Prime, or you can rent it for $3.99 on Apple TV or YouTube. It's also on Vudu for free and Tubi for free.
Yep. The next one also comes from the same vein as The Man from Earth and House. It is called Coherence. And this is another this is another one where people go out to a house of some sort and they're having discussions and everything. The biggest star in this movie is Nicholas Brendon, if you can believe it or not. Wow. And it's funny seeing him, and I was like, okay, this movie came out in 2013. Did this come out before all of his troubles? And apparently he always has troubles. Apparently they never end.
Quite some time.
Yeah, they never end. But Coherence is a same sort of deal. This time there's a comet that is passing overhead, and they're having discussions about this comet, and the power goes out, and they go outside and they notice that there's one house that has power, and they're like, okay, well, maybe we should send some people out and see if we can get some supplies from this house, or like maybe go there or something like that. And then they go over there and they find out that all of the people who are inside that house are them.
Ooh.
And so they decide not to do anything right away, of course. They go back to the house, and they're like, what do we do? And they're trying to discuss this in a rational manner and everything, and then they send two people out. They have to do a lot of things in this movie. I don't want to get too much into the technical details of it, but just suffice to say there are multiple there's multiple houses with multiple thems in it. And there's that sort of discussion that's going on. You remember the two boats in The Dark Knight where, you know, they're like trying to decide whether or not they need to kill these people or not and all that. You know, somebody comes up with the idea like, well, they're plotting to do the same thing to us. We should probably be plotting to do the same thing back.
Tiny says, give it to me.
Yeah.
I'll do what you should have done in the first place.
Yes, that's right. Tiny Lister shows up in this movie? No. It's very intriguing. I'll also throw in this nugget. There are moments where people from other houses come back to the house that, so like you have two people leave and then two people come back, but those two people are not the people who were originally in the house. So there's a lot of this like intrigue going on back and forth. And then by the end, there's a lot of like really cool things. If this type of mind-bending type of movie where you'll be going, what the fuck's going on? Oh my God, what the shit? This is one of those type of movies. The movie's called Coherence, I think, as probably because of irony, I guess. I don't know, because it's one of those where because it's one of those movies where it's like, I don't know what the fuck's going on, but I love it. So I will recommend that. So, you know, some mind-bending movies there, House and Coherence. It'll be interesting to see if somebody put a whole Man from Earth, House, Coherence, and maybe even The Invitation thrown in as a bonus. When Invitation doesn't have as much mind-blowing shit as the other three movies, but that's a marathon of similar movies right there. So
fantastic. All right, well, do we want to move on to our big recommend?
Go on to the big recommend.
I'm fine. It's just that you're so big.
It's so huge.
It's a good rule, but this is bigger than rules.
It's bigger on the inside.
Is it?
I noticed.
This week it is...
Yes, it's Batman.
The Batman.
Yeah, an interesting entry into this podcast, because we've so far been trying to come up with movies that people haven't been talking about as much, that, you know, that we feel like people should know about, people should have interest in. This movie is a, you know, number one blockbuster. You know, despite its 3-hour length, it's made, I believe, over $400 million worldwide in 2 weeks. Mm-hmm. And so this could have gone a lot of ways. We could have watched it and hated it. It could have been one or the other, where, you know, one liked it, one didn't. I think we both liked it. I don't think this would fit our normal, what we would normally do, though.
I agree with that.
It's kind of an experiment in some ways. So, first things first, I will say that I really enjoyed this movie because it is different from most comic book movies. When they set out to make a detective story, they actually made a detective story with this movie. Yes. They didn't have elements of a detective story and called it a detective story. They did with Captain America Winter Soldier with the paranoia thriller thing. Robert Redford's in it. It's paranoia thriller. but this one is an actual mystery. And of course, I get deeply involved in mysteries. I love those type of things. I love puzzles. I love, and it couldn't be a better opening villain for this. If this is a franchise, I don't know. I mean, this could be a one-off for all we know. The way Warner Brothers and DC work with their stuff. I mean, I guess it's going to be a franchise, but
I'm sure at this point it will be, but it's made too much money.
It's good to see the Riddler start this off and I don't know all the Batman comics. I've read a few of them, but is this a Riddler thing for him to want to impress Batman?
I haven't read a lot of Riddler runs, not in my understanding, not in this way, no. Mm-hmm. Like where he wants to be friends with him.
Mm-hmm.
I think there's probably been interpretations of the character that were like that, but I think historically he's just much more of a criminal who blows shit up and steals shit, but uses riddles to taunt Batman and mm-hmm. whatnot. Somewhere in between this and Jim Carrey.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing in Batman Forever, he is hoping to impress Bruce with that invention, that mind sucking invention that he has. And of course, Val Kilmer Batman is like, I would never create anything like this. This is bullshit. And then Jim Carrey's like, you were supposed to understand.
Yeah.
I'll make you understand. and then there's is it Batman Hush that Riddler shows up as a prominent character?
Yeah, I believe so.
Yeah.
I haven't read Hush.
I don't remember if that's another one where he's like trying to impress him, but there is the line in that one, if it's Batman Hush, where Batman says something to the effect that he's a second-rate villain or something like that. And that shows up kind of in this one. I think there's a tossed off line in there where it says that, where he says something like that. But anyway, I love the detective aspect of this. I love the mystery. That, you know, Batman is looking for clues and trying to figure out where those clues lead. And he's teaming up with Gordon. It doesn't feel like every once in a while he shows up and then he disappears like he does, but it feels like they're more of a team in this than in other previous iterations.
Yeah. There's even that scene. I do love that he's really the only cop that trusts Batman. And there's a couple of tense scenes in that regard, but then he gets all the cops to leave so he can talk to Batman alone, and he's like, I need you to punch me in the face so we can get out of here. And they're like whispering
such a great scene.
Outside views, it looks like they're having this heated discussion. It is more of a partnership. That's one of many things I think this movie did better than a lot of previous Batmans is that Gordon relationship with Batman.
Most definitely. That that argument scene reminded me a lot of the Sorry to Bother You part where they're coming up and they're when they have that argument that they're like, I wish you well. I wish you well. that's a brilliant scene.
Sorry, I don't mean to interrupt you.
No, go ahead.
This movie is too long.
Yeah, it is.
We'll get into more negatives. That's the main thing keeping me from adoring it, I think, is that it feels overstuffed. But what they got right, or what I liked that they did differently, that relationship with Gordon, I think the city feels more like a character than it has in a long time in Batman movies. I liked the placement. I liked this year, too, where he's been doing it for a while, but he still makes mistakes. He still screws up, and he still goes too far. And I liked the ending. I liked his narrating at the end. I think a lot of the hard-boiled narrating, there were times where it was a little much for me, but it worked more than I expected it to. And at the end, when he's like, I need to be more. I need to be better. And most importantly, this is my biggest happy. Batman, for once in a movie, got to be a first responder.
Yeah.
To help save people's lives.
Yeah.
And not just beat bad guy ass.
Mm-hmm.
The visuals are outstanding. The music is outstanding.
Mm-hmm.
And Colin Farrell for the win. When they announced they were doing a spin-off series for his character, before I saw the film, I was like, I don't know about this. And now I'm like, yes, that was the correct decision.
Mm-hmm.
He needs the spotlight for another movie or a whole series. He stole the whole movie for me, in my opinion, even though you can't tell it's him.
There's only two moments that you can see that it's Colin Farrell, and they're always a profile shot of some sort. Mm-hmm. One is when he's looking back in that trailer that we saw in the trailer a million times. And then it's another profile shot later, but yeah, Colin Farrell is great in this, especially when they think that he's the informant and they take him out to that out of nowhere place or whatever. And then they get on the computer or something and figure something else out. And then they drive off and they leave him there. And he's like, hey, do you remember that I'm at, you know, do you remember me? And,
I was supposed to get home.
I like that. Also like the fact that Batman doesn't just figure something out 5 seconds after he sees it.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that's a quality of the year one type stuff where he's making mistakes and things like that. But it still seems like no matter what iteration of Batman it is, it's like, boom, I know exactly what that means. And, a tool that is used in a murder early on is not considered, a big piece of it. It's that first murder, I believe, the Mayer murder. The murder weapon is not considered a big deal or meaningful in any way until much later on when he finds out that, oh, okay, this is a pattern of things going on, a pattern of murders going on. We should probably look into everything because everything has meaning. Everything is trying, you know, so
he even connects that bring a rat into the light line after it's too late.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
that guy's already dead. And he's like, oh, I just walked right into that one. I liked the detective stuff, that he didn't solve stuff too soon. I liked, as somebody said in the comments, the Batmobile, I think, was its own character in a way that wasn't just, you know, the Tim Burton stuff was fun, I suppose. And I liked the Tumbler in the Nolan movies. But this thing, I love that it appears that he built it himself. Like, it's just a custom car that he built in his own garage with tools and anger. I like that this Batman is more comfortable being Batman than Bruce Wayne. Mm-hmm. And it's overt. I think that's been hinted at before, but this is directly stated by the Riddler, but I think it's clear well before then that he is just not comfortable being Bruce Wayne, and he is much more comfortable beating ass with a mask on.
Yeah.
And for reasons that may be dangerous, that appeals to me. I don't think we've seen, I think Christian Bale's character liked being Bruce Wayne, at least in the first movie,
yeah,
as much as he liked being Batman.
Mm-hmm. Well, he definitely does. He likes winning, beating people in like business deals, and he buys that theater, or he buys that restaurant. I think he buys the theater too, the ballet hotel, yeah, or whatever, the hotel. You know, I think he does enjoy having lots of money and going around and spending it, for sure. And in this one, yeah, he clearly wants to be behind the mask more. Pattinson, from what I can tell, from what I've been able to read, Matt Reeves wanted to pattern him after Kurt Cobain. And we do hear Something in the Way a couple of times in this movie. Mm-hmm. Last time that I heard that song used to great effect was in Jarhead, wow, which was which is probably Jarhead's best scene. He patterned him after that. The Riddler was patterned after the Zodiac Killer. Mm-hmm. And that becomes pretty evident as you go further on into this. This is one of those things where I wish we could be more like our buddy Dicer and not have seen the trailer. Because knowing Paul Dano is the Riddler, I said this to you after we watched this. There's the moment where we first start hearing him talk, and it's on that video that he sends, and he's going way over the top, and he's talking, and I was like, oh my God, that sounds so much like his character in There Will Be Blood, when he's going over the top in that during his sermons. And I wish I could have, you know, I wish I could have not known and like been able to say, I think that might be Paul Dano. And then when he shows up, be rewarded with that by the end of it. In the chat, by the way, they're talking about that car chase scene. That is one of the best car chase scenes I have seen in a long time. I'll tell you why, too. And this is one that I don't know. I don't know what it is, but he has a lot of low angle photography during that. There is, and once you're like sort of on the road speeding, it becomes a much more active experience for the viewer. There's even a shot, I'm sure that they had attached some apparatus to the back of the tire or something like that. Ooh. And had this shot. They had this shot where it was like, it's away from the car, but it's following it. Like maybe they had a vehicle that was following it or something. They did something with special effects or something, but there's a shot that goes in there. That's just amazing to me. I was like, my God, man, what did they do? What did they do to get that shot? Because it's perfectly following level with that, but it's only like 5 feet away. So it's not on the car unless they built something on it to, you know, or they just put another car there, but it's very steady. So I'm like, God, this is such a really cool, that car chase scene is one of the best. While we always talk about stuff like French Connection and Ronin, yep, and some people talk about Matrix Reloaded, but, I haven't seen a car chase scene like this in a long time. It's really good.
Yeah, it's heart pounding. It's visceral. It's like you're there. And you know, I shouldn't be surprised, because this is the same guy who did that 360 spinning tank shot.
Yeah,
Dawn of the Planet of the Apes.
Yeah,
so he is a man who likes his unique camera angles. You know, in terms of some of the stuff that maybe added to the bloat, there was a whole 10 minutes there, maybe 15, where he goes to the mobster and the mobster says, "The other mobster killed your parents." And he's like, "Grr." And then he goes to Alfred and Alfred's like, "No, it was the mobster that told you that killed your parents." And he's like, "Grr." I'm like, he will believe anything anyone says to him at this point.
Yeah.
I didn't need any of that section in there. I think there, at the end, there are a few decisions that feel a little rushed to me. Like, when he realizes there's more to come and he goes back to Riddler's apartment and realizes he should dig up the carpet. And then he types in a URL, digs up the carpet and types in a URL. And then basically there's a video completely expositing everything that's about to happen.
Yeah.
And I realize at that point it's a little too late, but it just felt a little... We better wrap up the Riddler's plan. Let's just have him explain everything. And then
yeah.
We get the flooding of the city, which, again, I love the moment where Batman got to rescue those people. But I don't all of the flooding, that didn't make any sense to me as part of Riddler's plan. Riddler was trying to kill corrupt politicians to free Gotham, not flood the whole city and kill everyone. So he went from a man with some measure of principle to a mass murderer without any explanation.
Yeah. And while that makes sense that he wants to hang out with Batman in Arkham while this all happens and everything. Yeah. The whole thing was about, hey, we're teaming together. I'm taking out bad guys for you. And that doesn't make sense at all. You're right. I mean, just to try to go at, if you hate Gotham, just go ahead and don't worry about this plan that you had to expose all these different people in a part of a plot.
Yeah.
Do something else. Do a whole bunch of terrorism. Be the Joker, I guess. I don't get that either. I guess they had to find, that's one of those things where I'm sure in the screenplay they're like, we've got to have something here that happens, you know. Yeah.
and be a big finish.
Yeah. And it almost feels like to me that could have been something where I don't want to blaspheme the Batman universe, but have Thomas Wayne be living and Riddler is going after his dad at the end or something like that, or a whole bunch of people are on a boat doing a society thing, you know, and then that's where Riddler's got his final plan. But yeah, this whole mass murdering thing definitely doesn't make any sense.
I did love that beat where they make you think he knows Bruce Wayne is Batman, because he's going, "Bruce Wayne." And then he finally goes, "He's the only one we didn't get." And you're like, "Oh, he doesn't know." And you can even see it on fucking Batman's face. He's like, "Phew."
Yeah.
I'm out of that one.
All right. Yeah.
Which is, I like, because I think there have been too many villains in Batman films that know or find out he's Bruce Wayne.
Mm-hmm.
Far too many.
There was a moment there that I did think that he knew. Because there's those, it was all those pictures that he had up, but he was plotting to kill Bruce Wayne. You think you were just right. Talking about that. I never understand like some of these movies where they're like, "Oh, I know who it is." Like in Batman v Superman, where Lex Luthor is like, "I just know who these guys are. Fuck it."
Yeah. Yeah, fuck you for asking.
Yeah, they don't have any any reasoning behind it or whatever. It's just, "I'm Lex Luthor, I'm bad. I know you're the guy, so fuck it."
Now they have said some things about the next movie, some hints. There's a cameo at the end of this movie, and Matt Reeves has been careful to say he does not anticipate that character being a main villain in the next movie or even a future movie.
Mm-hmm.
So I think they're going to go directly. I think they're going to go Court of Owls, which is basically, I think I recommended the Night of the Owls book a few weeks ago in this podcast. But that's where there's a secret society pulling strings, and they decide that they want to kill Batman and all his helpers or whatnot. But that maybe that's just wishful thinking. I don't know. But I would say this was more than good enough for me to be excited about where they go next.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think Alfred was a little underutilized.
And not only, which is weird, right? He's underutilized, but also adds to the bloat of the movie. That's what's so weird about him is that he's virtually worthless in this.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's a scene where they sort of like cram him into the narrative because Bruce Wayne gets that package and he's the one who's going to open. He stupidly opens it. I don't know what the fuck he's thinking in that, by the way.
Yeah.
And then that puts in, he somehow survives that blast, which I have no idea. Then there's like this, you know, forever hospital scene after that. And that's the type of thing where like we understand that movies have this clock that is on them at all, always basically, where we got to come up with a script, we got to film it, we got to make sure all the people who are in it get out of here so they can do other projects. We've got to get it edited. We've got to blah 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 for a release date that we're telling everybody this is the release date. And so you see those, that's where those flaws come up. I think if they had more time, they would have maybe cut that out, or that comes from the script phase. They couldn't have cut that out in editing because that's too important.
I mean, there's also like a total of 8 solid minutes of motorcycle riding in this movie.
Mm-hmm.
And the people in the chat are shaming us for not having mentioned Zoe Kravitz yet. And I thought she was great,
mm-hmm.
And I even like the final scene of her and Batman riding out respectively on their motorcycles. But prior to that, in a 3-hour movie, I don't need a dozen different motorcycle riding scenes.
Yeah.
There was just an awful lot of, I don't know. I feel like even just some mild trimming here and there could have cut probably 20 minutes off this length. We just linger in some scenes and shots a little longer than I think is necessary.
Mm-hmm.
But again, I really, really enjoyed it. I would still recommend it. It's still a big recommend.
There is maybe a reason why we haven't brought it. It's not because Zoe Kravitz is bad or anything. It's just that hardly any of that. And most of these episodes, I've just seen the movie. This has been a week now since I've seen this movie. But is there a reason why we haven't brought her up? Is she really? I mean, she's not terribly integral. Really? Is she?
Well,
maybe
they tried to do. It's so crazy how much Long Halloween is in this movie.
Yeah,
the Catwoman's dad is the mobster, and
mm-hmm.
Again, that's a subplot. I think she works great as somebody who works at Penguin's Club, and dangerously goes down to the basement club that one time for Batman. But she's kind of a thief, and they're in and out of each other's paths. But once you start making her part of the big finale, there it was kind of a slog.
Yeah, I think I was thinking about this earlier. That scene, I always have to distinguish between why am I disappointed in this scene because I don't like what the character does in the scene, or do I not like it because it's not the right choice for mm-hmm. the movie? And I kept thinking, man, I want to see her go down there and get all this great information. You know, from Peter Sarsgaard and is it Corey Stahl that's down there too, I believe?
I think so, yeah.
And instead she gets flustered when Batman starts pressing her about the Falcone connection and everything, she goes in the bathroom and basically throws away the device and all that. And I was like, man, it would have been nice if she could have just gotten a good conversation there and then come out, and it would have been a little bit more, I don't know. It just felt like she feels kind of like a throw in almost, even though she has some parts in there that are integral to the solving of this mystery. It just doesn't feel like Batman actually needs her to do that. So I don't know. I could be completely wrong about that, but that's whenever I talk about a movie and it's like, oh, we haven't mentioned this person, I'm like, oh, is there a reason for that?
I mean, if this was a comic book, it'd be pretty easy to write that Batman fired a small listening device onto the back of a mobster's jacket as he walked into the club and could just get all that information himself without needing to send Catwoman in there and maybe get her life risked. I don't know.
Yeah.
But I didn't have a problem with her performance. I enjoy her as an actress.
Absolutely.
I liked the red alias wig that she wore.
Yep.
One part.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, what else is there to say? Anything before we move on to some questions?
No, I don't think so. I mean, and just as the other thing about Catwoman, right, is that there's a sort of a half and half thing going on where she's kind of bad, but she's also kind of good, but she's not really helping Batman. And then throwing her into this hardcore mystery story just seems like, I don't know, it's too much. It's an excess that we didn't need, probably. Unfortunately, unless she's going to actually help and more than she did. Anyway, that's all I have to say about that.
Well, before we get into questions, mm-hmm. we both have prepared a surprise double feature since this was sort of a mutual choice this week.
Shh. Be very, very quiet.
Secret? What secret?
Our dirty little secret.
I tell you something I've never told anyone.
Yep.
Chris, why don't you kick us off? Because mine is going to sink the show.
No, it's not. The movie that I thought about most during this was Seven. Seven's got that whole, you know, serial killer vibe, but it also, like, with the clues left behind, that type of thing is going on throughout, and it's a dirty, grungy you know, world that Batman is walking around in, and wouldn't be surprised if he stumbled on a Seven type serial killing spree at some point. Even there's even a point where they go in Edward Nashton, I think is how they call the Riddler, whatever. They go into his apartment and there's those books with all the very tiny writing on it.
Yeah.
And I was like, that's so Seven. It's just a Seven thing.
I thought that was just straight up homage too, right? Like that's so on the nose.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I'm surprised when I was looking at some various things that Seven didn't come up, but apparently people have been comparing this movie to Seven quite a bit. So, I have another movie in mind, but I'm going to let you go ahead with your double feature.
Well, I might accidentally spoil it in telling you what
I doubt it.
Could not bring myself to pick. Okay, I'm either going to jail or going to hell. I couldn't bring myself to pick Zodiac, even though that's the right pick. You could pair this movie with Seven. You could pair this movie with Zodiac. It would work excellent. I just couldn't bring myself to do it, man, because I gotta be different. I gotta be weird. And so I decided to take one of my favorite things about the movie, the main character's arc, that he tries to do good, makes some mistakes, does a little good, only to realize at the end he could have done so much more and so much better.
Passion of the Christ. No, I'm just kidding.
Schindler's List.
Schindler's List, okay.
Because I believe that journey for Schindler is very similar to the journey for Batman in this movie, in that he's actually doing good, trying to do good, doesn't always get it perfect, and then in the end kind of goes, oh, I need to be doing so much more. I failed. Oh, my God. And so for that reason, I'm sorry if it's like some sort of sacrilege. I think that would be an interesting double feature to watch two characters in wildly different worlds walk through a similar journey.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. The other one that I thought of, although technically this this is why this movie was not mentioned as the double feature, but LA Confidential, especially the book, this is why the movie would not fit in with this, but the movie LA Confidential is awesome. Of course, the book has more connection to, Edmund Exley's dad and what he did in the past and how it connects to the Night Owl killings. Whereas the movie keeps his dad as sort of an angelic type of figure.
Interesting.
And everything. But in the book, his dad is sort of a part of the dirty dealings of cops and politicians back in the older days. And so this movie has the same kind of deal going on where a mystery is being solved, and the person solving it, their father was part of the dirty dealings going on back in the day.
Interesting.
So LA Confidential also feels like a good one, but I don't know if the movie itself would be you would read LA Confidential and then watch The Batman. That would be that double feature.
I think that works.
Yeah.
I like it.
All right, yeah, let's go on to the questions.
Question.
I got something to say.
I want the truth.
I'm listening.
Well, and again, real quick, before questions, I wanted to mention next week's big recommend, which, if I'm not mistaken, is actually going to be our best of the 2021 year in review discussion.
Yep.
With our friend Aaron Dicer.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And we will still be here live with you beautiful people who wish to show up at 11 a.m. Tuesday, the 22nd, Central Time. Now, we can move on to questions.
Yeah, let's do it.
Are you ready? All right. Who are some of your favorite movie characters who rarely or never speak? I think we've done variations of this in the past, but it's easy to pull multiples for this.
Yeah, I think we have, although I think this is the first time I'm going to mention Silent Bob. Nice. I mean, it's an easy answer, but especially in Chasing Amy, just because of how he's silent, and then like has this huge monologue about how he met this girl named Amy and how he fucked up that relationship and everything. And it just comes out of nowhere. That's my favorite part of it. I also like how they reference it later in Jay and Silent Bob Strike Back, where he's like, oh, you talk anytime when they talk that, pull out that stupid Amy story, but you know, you can't do it when you tell me what, when he's trying to figure out what the sign on the car said. Silent Bob is a lot of fun. So I will go with that.
Very good answer. Very good answer. I don't have as many good stories for this because this guy says even less than Silent Bob, but I'm going with the Yarp Narp guy from Hot Fuzz.
Yep, yep.
Who's like an evil henchman and who I think is even the Hound.
He is the Hound.
And all movie long, he only says Yarp or Narp. I think it's mostly Yarp.
It's Yarp. He says, in fact, I don't think he says Narp. It's Simon Pegg who ends up saying Narp over the radio or the phone or whatever.
That's right.
So, yeah.
Oh, man, that makes me laugh. That movie is such a genre bender. I love it.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Let's move on to the next. This will be an interesting callback to earlier in the show now. Who is the evilest character, in your opinion?
Yeah, so in Schindler's List, obviously the unseen character behind the scenes is the evil, probably the most evil character in this whole thing. But I don't think Hitler actually shows up in Schindler's List anywhere. If he does, it's mm-hmm. Like archive footage or something like
right.
that. But Amon Gett, who is played by Ray Fiennes in this, and you know, he just kills indiscriminately. You see him the very first scene, he's on top of his balcony shooting just random people, random Jews in the camp. And, but I think what makes him the most evil character is that speech. And I'll go ahead and say what that speech is. When they go in and they raid the Krakow slums, and it's at the end of it, he goes, "Today is history. Today will be remembered. Years from now, the young will ask and wonder about this day. Today is history, and you are part of it. 600 years ago, when elsewhere they were footing the blame for the Black Death, Casimir the Great, so-called, told the Jews they could come to Krakow. They came, they trundled their belongings into the city, they settled, they took hold, they prospered in business, science, education, the arts. With nothing they came, and with nothing they flourished. For six centuries there has been a Jewish Krakow. By this evening, those 6 centuries will be a rumor. They never happened. Jesus. Today is history." And it's one of the most crushing parts of Schindler's List, that speech. It's something that will infect you to your core when you see it.
I do think it's interesting that you chose a real life Nazi commander, and I chose Hans Landa.
Yeah, yeah.
A fictionalized version of arguably the same man or a similar man. And what makes Hans so evil, in my opinion, is his outward kindness.
Mm-hmm.
The honey he uses to lure you in before the trap closes. Just one of the very best introductions to an actor I've ever had in my entire life. That's the first time I've ever seen this guy in anything.
Mm-hmm.
And he's so good. And from what I hear in real life, the exact opposite. Like, he's apparently just a really gentle, good soul. But yeah, I also wrote down that the devil is technically a character in several films.
Sure.
And he's pretty evil.
Yeah. Well, and in our chat, we even had Al Pacino and Devil's Advocate was pitched.
Umbridge.
Yeah, Professor Umbridge, definitely. Clancy Brown from Shawshank, my God, yes, is an evil, evil good prick.
Dr. Evil.
Yes, Dr. And Jean Valjean, who could forget Jean Valjean from Les Miserables.
Evil stealing motherfucker.
Yeah, exactly. So, go on to, go to the next question.
All right. What do you think is a movie whose impact influence is greater than the movie itself? My maybe controversial choice would be Batman Begins, because it really started the era of grounded reboots, origin stories, for better or worse. If I'm looking at the movie itself, while it is great, the action is not very good, and neither is Katie Holmes.
Yeah. For me, this might be Blade Runner. I have never heard of a movie more often in my life where people have said, I've watched it multiple times and I just don't see what's good about it or great about it. But it has so much influence in the way we make futuristic cities and dystopias and, it has a lot of like good to it. It's just that when you watch Blade Runner on its own, there's people who are either completely sucked in by that world or they're just not. And if you're not, you're like, that was pretty good. Why was that? Why do people always cite this as one of their favorite movies or whatever? I've heard this more often with Blade Runner than anything. So, I think it has a lot of influence. I just don't think it's as good of a movie as people give it credit for.
My answer is Taken.
Yeah.
I think you can have a good time with Taken, but its influence, I mean, you basically have every single 50s and 60s male star and some female stars looking at or making their own kind of Taken style ass beating. You got the Equalizer movies with Denzel. You've got every movie that Liam Neeson has made since Taken. There are 19 different ones. You've got the Peppermint. You've got the Cameron Charlize Theron Netflix ass.
Yeah.
You've got Nobody. there's just this mass glut of movies of people in their 50s kicking
and
ass.
And it sort of guided Liam Neeson's own career for a long time.
That's almost all he does anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, it's eventually he'll have to stop and start playing lawyers again.
Lawyers.
I mean, everything from that plane movie to the train movie to the snowmobile movie to the one with the kid and the sharpshooter, whatever that just came. I mean, they're all the same movie. God love them. I enjoy them all.
But yeah.
I don't think Taken is anywhere near as good as the future it created or influenced in Hollywood.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right, we got time for a couple more, right?
Yeah,
let's see
what
the fans said on that one.
Citizen Kane. I can totally see that. It's one of those, I don't know. I think in the modern day, when you watch a Citizen Kane, you see so many things in it. They're like, what's so groundbreaking about this? Well, it's kind of because so many movies copied it afterwards. Now, I kind of agree. I'm still young enough to say that when I first watched Citizen Kane, I was like, okay, I like that. I think it's a good movie. Why is it? Why do people always consider it the best? Of course, then we start to get into the idea of something being overrated. I guess this is another way of saying a movie is overrated. But you know, I don't know. Citizen Kane, I've seen it millions of times, and it feels like I come out with something new on each viewing of Citizen Kane. But I totally can see that answer. What else was there? There was another one that was thrown out there. There's a lot of cat talk, obviously.
Star Wars.
Yeah, sure.
Groundhog Day.
Yeah.
Hangover.
Someone says Bridesmaids. Psycho. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
These are some good answers.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
Let's
move on and we'll see how this one takes up time wise. What's a movie that would be elevated with a different score or soundtrack?
Yeah, I'll let you go with this one because I could not come up with an answer.
And this is a shameful one because I've seen The Italian Job way too many times. It's mm-hmm. charming, but it's nowhere near as good as the amount of times I've seen it.
Mm-hmm.
But the soundtrack always bothers me. This always bothers me. There's this Scott Weiland cover of Money by Roger Waters a Pat Benatar song that's pretty decent.
Mm-hmm.
But the rest of it, I just feel like there's moments where the scene transitions would kick and punch a lot more if they had either better song choices. There's not much of a score at all in this movie. It's almost all like song cues.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe get somebody to score some of it. I don't know. I really like that movie. I just think it could be elevated with a little bit better music choices.
There are very few movies that I watch that, like, I'll see it and I'm like, man, if they could have just done something better with this soundtrack, or they did something better with the score. And I even tried to come up with some movies that I just sort of like, and I'm like, I don't know, I kind of like the score in that movie. I couldn't come up with any. It's not something that I have thought about, and maybe the next time I watch some movies that are a little so-so, I'll have an answer for this, because that's not something that I really consider. But even stuff like, I was like sitting there like Glengarry Glen Ross, it's not a movie that needs a soundtrack. In fact, there's very little score in it at all, but it has that opening title and that closing title, and it's a jazzy score. Yeah. And it's perfectly fine for what it does. So I was like looking for stuff like that, and I just couldn't find anything that, like, even the smallest of movies seemed like they had an okay score, or score wouldn't have made them better. So
looks like most of the viewers are making joke takes, I think.
Yeah.
Somebody doesn't like Lin-Manuel Miranda, so they put Moana and Encanto on there.
Someone says adding score to No Country for Old Men.
Batman.
Yeah, exactly. The Batman.
All right. Mm-hmm. Let's do a fun one for the last question, and then we'll be done for the day. Create your own Transformer. Include what you want: vehicle form, name, color scheme, etc.
Okay, so, you know, and not knowing everything about the Transformers universe, I'm sure that I'm coming up with something that has already been come up with. But mine would be a chameleon, one that can blend into the outside surroundings and you know, become almost invisible. Of course, like movies do, they have to have a little bit of a flaw in them, or else, you know, you wouldn't be able to defeat them. They would just be invisible all the time, and that's no fun. So they have to have a bit of a sheen, or, you know, rain causes a problem, or, you know, something like that. This car is going to be red. It's a Lamborghini.
Nice.
And, you know, it blends into whatever it touches. And that's what I would do. Now, I'm sure there's a million Transformers that do this, but
I don't know about that. There is a red Lamborghini in the first run of the cartoon, but he doesn't have any kind of, blending in powers.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a unique twist. I kind of like that.
Mm-hmm.
I went goofy. So I named mine the Benevolator, and he's the world's kindest tank. And he transforms into a robot that specializes in assisted baby births and yoga.
Yes. There you go. That's a helpful Transformer right there.
uh, though every now and then, I think it's fun to have goofy questions like that.
So, mm-hmm.
You guys make sure and send questions every week. I check the Discord. I check the subreddit for Cinema Sins. You can email Recotopia at cinemasins.com. What else do we need to say as we wrap things up, Chris?
I don't think so. I don't think there's anything that I can think of right now. So, yeah,
well,
we
you
love
guys.
You. Love you, the wonderful people out there. Next week's going to be the best of 2021. And
yeah,
then we'll get
wait.
Back to a regular schedule after that. So, yeah, we love you. Love you, beautiful people. Thank you so much.
See you.
See you guys. Part of the live show by being a member of the Sin Club at Patreon at patreon.com/cinemasins. Chat with us on the CinemaSins Discord at discord.gg/cinemasins or CinemaSins Twitter at CinemaSins, and email any comments or questions to recotopia@cinemasins.com. That's recotopia@cinemasins.com.
Didn't fuck up. Did you see, probably don't look at Twitter every day, but did you see that the dude bought Tom Brady's last touchdown ball for $500,000?
Mm-hmm.
And like a day later, Brady unretired.
Yep. I did see that. Mm-hmm.
That's the fastest depreciation in history.
What an asshole. There's an interesting thing going on in, I don't know the full story. It's just that it's interesting that there's this poker vlogger named Rampage who I've watched his vlogs for a few years, and he started off really small, and over the years you see him ramping it up in stakes and winning tournaments and things like that. And he's obviously started making a lot of money, and he does pretty well on YouTube as well. He went into some just crazy game. Like, you should not, unless you have probably more than a few million dollars, you shouldn't go into this one game. And, I wouldn't say he did anything terribly wrong. It's just that you just don't have the money to do this type of game, man. You just don't. And he has his own personal channel, and he came on and he was like, I just want to be very upfront with you guys. Like, look, I'm not broke. I'm not bankrupt or anything. He's like, but that I lost $150,000 and I'm working through it and everything. And I'm sitting there, I'm trying to think, how much money behind do you think this guy has? Do you think he's got enough to lose 150? I'd feel like he doesn't. Like if you had, let's say you had 500,000 in the bank, losing 150 is a massive chunk.
Yes.
And because of any other expenses that you've started to put on yourself because you have that kind of money. So
yeah.
I'm just sitting there going, man, dude, this is why you see people who have the means, they still only play, you know, smaller games, because you get into this one where the blinds are like this and this, and they put on straddles, which makes it even higher. And you start playing games where the average pot is $6,000 or so.
Jesus.
and those things escalate quickly.
Jesus.
So it's interesting to me just watching this guy's. I'm hoping that he understands that he can't play these games until he's got a huge bankroll, like a huge one.
Who's behind the scenes here?
Now who's doing that?
Who's eavesdropping without showing their face?
Just me, mm-hmm. guys. Mm-hmm. Just me.
I was gonna message you. I didn't think you were even here. I thought that was like the red line means no. Why won't you show your face anymore? Are you ashamed?
I mean, if you want to see my face, I can show you.
I know. I just was curious if you were like casual.
Let's
Tuesday
put a smile on that face.
There's a lot of alcohol in the room. And the only one that I knew for sure was a little bit tipsy was Keaton. He was tipsy at his table. And then when he got up on stage, it was clear that he was loose. He was ready to talk. So. The only other big reaction in the room that I don't know if it came through on the broadcast was when they announced Best Animated TV Show, and the winner was What If. The room literally booed.
Mm. Oh wow!
It was one of the most interesting things. I mean, like, well, then who voted for it? I didn't vote
right?
for it.
So many of our franchises are afraid to move on.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Like, Star Wars is the poster child for this. Like,
yep.
you finally gave us somebody. I mean, the last trilogy, the J.J. Abrams, basically, trilogy, mm-hmm. Ryan Johnson, that was basically the same thing all over again until the end when it was literally the same thing all over again.
Yep.
But then you give us The Mandalorian and there's like, okay, well, here's a new kind of newish character. And oh, here's Luke Skywalker.
Mm-hmm.
And you just, they can't get away from it. Now we're going to do Obi-Wan Kenobi. And I'm just like, I remember reading a lot of the novels after the first trilogy. There was a whole world of possibilities out there. And they just keep going back to goddamn Tatooine.
No Way Home, where I generally shrugged and said, that's pretty good, but it feels like Spider-Man Icecapades or Spider-Man's on Ice, because it's like, you know, a spotlight comes down and says, and do you remember Tobey Maguire?
I still haven't heard anybody raving about the first hour of that movie. I'm not saying it hasn't happened, but that's not what I'm seeing. All I'm seeing is the raving about the Icecapades stuff, which...
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure isn't. It looks like Doctor Strange 2 is going to do the same freaking thing.
Yeah.
And, you know, maybe I'm just old and yelling at clouds.
Don't know. Maybe. It just seems like.
Playing Chew the Bark Off Trees.
Well, I mean, that's the thing, right? Even though I hate the presentation of how they got them back in, once they start all talking together and they have their own different universes to talk about, that's an interesting kind of dynamic to the movie. But I don't like this. I don't like this whole "we've got to rehabilitate the villains" thing. I don't like that at all. That's what they're doing in this. It's like,
you
actually have, like, you know, oh, you really have good qualities. We don't want you to die anymore. So we'll put you back in. I don't know how that works. How does that work?
I don't either. Yeah, no, it doesn't. Mm. You know how it works? Multiverse.
Although Icarus is like Superman, but Captain Marvel's like Superman, so, you know.
Maybe they should have babies.
Maybe they should have babies. You're right. and as Jeremy moves to the side so everybody can see the sleeping kitty on his couch.